Aloha. Welcome to Island Issues, our weekly public affairs program about Hawaii Island's people, issues, and concerns over the air and online at koacountry1077.com and at lava1053.com. Now, here's your host, Sherry Bracken.
Aloha. Good Sunday morning. Welcome to Island Issues. You may hear us on the radio every Sunday at 6:30 a.m. on Koa Country 107.7 FM and at 8 a.m. on Lava 105.3 FM. And the podcasts are online at lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. Island Issues is sponsored by Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar at Queen Shops and on Ali'i Drive. According to the Honolulu Star Advertiser, fewer than 2% of the businesses here in Hawaii have been in business for 100 years or more. On this island, in 1916, the Kei Taniguchi Shoten was started, a small store that I envision as one of those mom-and-pop kind of stores, sort of like the Keaho store, the Onizuka store, other small stores we have scattered around the island. But it's a story best told by the family members who still own and run our island's only locally owned grocery store chain, now called KTA Superstores. Today, I'm joined by KTA's chairman and chief executive officer, the grandson of the founder, Barry Taniguchi. Barry has been listed as CEO since 1989. Barry Taniguchi has been recognized not just for his business acumen, serving on several corporate and nonprofit boards, but he's also been recognized for his good works in the community, including in 1997, the Hawaii Island Chamber of Commerce honoring him with the Humanitarian of the Year Award. In 2003, he received the Hall of Honor Award from the University of Hawaii College of Business Administration and recently was the recipient of the Outstanding Alumnus from the University of Hawaii Alumni Association. And in 2015, Hawaii Island YWCA recognized Barry Taniguchi as one of the island's most remarkable people. Good morning, aloha, Barry Taniguchi.
Good morning, Sherry.
And we're also joined by KTA's president and chief operating officer, the great-grandson of the founders, Barry's son, Toby Taniguchi. Toby got his degree from University of Portland in communications and management and went to the University of Southern California, USC, for the Executive Food Management Program. Toby's official bio says he became an assistant store manager in 1996 and has worked his way up the ranks. Good morning. Aloha, Toby.
Aloha, Sherry. Good morning.
Now, your bio says you became an assistant store manager in 1996. Did you have other jobs at KTA before that?
You know, I actually had a few jobs at KTA. I actually almost had just about every single job that we have at the store, with the exception of perhaps a pharmacist or a buyer. But everything else, I've pretty much had a job in.
I sort of figured the family business, they probably got you to work really early.
Yeah, pretty quick.
Let's go back to the beginning. And Barry, I'd like to turn to you. What was the very beginning of KTA Superstores? Who were these people who founded it? Where did they do that and why?
That's an interesting question. My grandfather immigrated from Japan with my grandmother. And as a couple, they lived okay. He worked at a wholesaler in Hilo, not his own store. And when my grandmother became pregnant with their child, first child, who happened to be my father, Yukio, he was born in January 1916. My grandfather felt that he has to raise more money now because he has one more mouth to feed. So he tried to figure out how can he do that? How can she work and bring in some income to help sustain the family? And then he had this brilliant idea of opening a store where she could actually mind the store and mind the baby at the same time. So that's why the year that the store was founded, 1916, same year as the year my father was born.
I love it that your grandfather thought it would be a good idea for his wife, your grandmother, to get a job. Let's make a job at home. That is too funny. And actually, that was the way a lot of family-owned stores started.
I think you're right. You know, and in the old days, it was a lot of it was family. In fact, my grandfather's, one of his basic philosophies was that once the store started going, he said, this will always give an opportunity for any family member who needs a job to come back and work with us in the business.
Wow. Talk about prophetic. I mean, I'm looking at two of the family members right here. So did you ever get to see that actual store?
No, unfortunately. Well, let me give you a little history in the beginning part. Their first store was in Waikia Town, down close to Suisang. That was opened in 1916. In 1939, they opened a branch store in downtown Hilo, which was close to pretty much almost the same area where we are now, much smaller though. in the 1946 tidal wave, the tsunami, it destroyed the Waikia store. So the downtown store became the primary store. I was born just a little after the 46 wave, so I never saw the Waikia store.
Interesting. So in the early days, after you actually, or your grandparents actually had that store in Hilo, what did the store look like? I mean, right now, KTA in downtown Hilo is a reasonably good-sized store, but what was it back then, do you know?
It was about a third of the size it was. Of course, we didn't have everything. We didn't have a lot of products. That store, as the shops on the side started going out of business, my grandfather acquired the property to expand to what it is today. So you can imagine being a third of that, and today it's gone to like about 100% of what it is today. But there was a flower shop, a Simon shop, you know, small shops in between. I remember as a kid playing there, you know, going in and out of the shops, having lunch there, playing. And it's elevated from the ground, so we used to play in the basement area.
Ooh.
It was fun.
Is the basement still there?
It's still there.
What's in the basement?
Nothing.
Oh, I thought it could be the source of great treasure and things like
no,
that.
No, nothing's there. Actually, it's sand down there. Because in the old days when the buildings were built, all they did was they put rocks and put pillars on that to stabilize the floor. So the floor is an elevated floor from the ground.
Interesting question. In any of the tsunamis since, did the ground get wet? Did you have tsunami water inside?
Yeah, in the 1960 tsunami, the water went through the store downstairs, flooded out. In the old days, we had our compressors and machinery for the refrigeration downstairs. And it got all shorted, everything got damaged down there. So we don't have anything down there except maybe storage, excess storage. And it's not that high. It's a crawl space, like maybe you cannot stand up straight. You would have to bend over to get down there.
So perfect for little kids to play in.
Yeah, exactly. That was our playground.
And so how many siblings do you have, Barry?
I have one brother and one sister.
And are they part of KTA Superstores now?
Yes, my brother works. He's semi-retired now. He's handling special projects for us now. In fact, he was coordinating the whole centennial celebration. And my sister, who's the youngest in my family, works in the store office at Poinako.
So talk about expansion. You expanded into the Hilo store, which then became the main store. When did KTA expand to the other locations?
Okay, great. The first expansion from the Keawe Street store was Kailua-Kona. And in those days, it was by the old banyan tree.
Right, but that wasn't until when? The 50s?
1959.
Okay.
In 1959, AmFac was running that store. It was a food store. And I think they decided at that time that they wanted to get out of the food business. So they actually went to approach my grandfather and asked if we were interested in taking over that operation. And my grandfather, of course, jumped at the opportunity to do that. But they did tell him that they're going to redevelop that area to a bigger hotel later. King Kamehameha Hotel was a small hotel, same property on the side. But they did say that they're going to redevelop that area. So my grandfather, in the meantime, started looking for property in Kailua so we would be able to move when the day came when they had to, when they going to redevelop the hotel. And that day came in the mid-70s, 1975, I think, is when we moved in the Konako Shopping Center, where we are today there. In the meantime, that was the store, what we call store number two, the Kailua store. Store number three is the Poinako store, and that opened in 1966. And it was about not even half the size of what it is today. And we had opened that store in 66. In 1976, we added a warehouse in a separate building, adjacent building. So we had a warehouse building and a store building on the same property. Then in 1988, we connected the two and made one big building. So that's 1, 2, 3. One is downtown Hilo, 2 is Kailua, 3 is Poinako store. Then our fourth store that we opened was the Kyoho store, which is in Kyoho. And that opened in 1984. And that was my project when it came down to it. With this thing going where Tony kind of ran the expansion program for the Poinako. So when I came to work for the store, my first project was the Kyoho store. So that was my first store project to put together.
So you just remodeled the Keaho store. Was that your project too, or did you pass that down
I
to Toby?
I passed it down to Toby. Well, we had done that in 1984. Then a few years later, we did the Waimea store in 1989 and the Waikoloa store in 1990. So those are the six stores that we have now.
Pretty good. Are you, I hate to ask this, I should ask this perhaps later, but are you thinking of expanding further here on Hawaii Island?
You can ask the future leader, or the leader for the future. Well, but I'll give you an answer, and the answer is yes. It's always in the back of our mind. We look for opportunities. We have a couple of ideas that we're looking at now. It's nowhere close to sign the dotted line and get in there, but we're looking at things.
The name of the store originally was K. Taniguchi Shoten, S-H-O-T-E-N, and I may not be saying that correctly, but tell us about that first name and how you ended up with KTA Superstores.
That's a good question. I don't know the whole history, but I'll tell you what I can tell you. Shoten really meant store in Japanese. So when they first opened it, it was K, of course, was for my grandfather, Koichi Taniguchi, so K. Taniguchi Shoten. Then it came to K. Taniguchi Store because it became Americanized. And then it came to K. Taniguchi Supermarket because in 1954, we converted the mom-and-pop type store into a supermarket where you got self-service meats and a meat department and things like that. And that's how we operated all the way to the 70s. And the reason why it came out KTA is real funny. In the old days, when product was coming from Japan, they would just put initials on the box. So in this case, it would have been KT. And my grandfather's, and in Japanese, the diamond is a good luck symbol. So he had put a diamond with KT. Problem was, there was another store, same initials, different name. And their lucky symbol was a diamond too. So the product would get mixed up. So he added on the letter A, just to differentiate. So there's no really meaning for the letter A. So when people say, everybody asks me, does the A stand for associates? I said, no, it really doesn't have. And really all it does was it was an identifying factor to differentiate K. Taniguchi from K. Tahara, which was the other store. So there was a symbol, KTA, and that was his logo, so to speak. And in the 70s, if you kind of recall, American Factors became AmFac. All of these long names became short names. And everybody started calling us KTA anyway because of the logo. So officially we did in the mid-70s change the name of the store to KTA Superstores. And what's funny is that some old-time customers, mostly in Kailua, that they refer to us as K. Taniguchi, or still Taniguchi Supermarket, they still go back to the old name.
Well, you know, we have a lot of Japanese kupuna. Mm-hmm. I mean, and actually, since I shop at both KTA stores in Keaho and Kailua, I do see a lot of older Japanese mm-hmm. shoppers, and right. That's pretty cool that they still call you by your old name.
Yeah.
What kind of products did you get back in the day from Japan? Because it's kind of fascinating when you think about importing product from someplace that was so far away years and years ago, decades ago.
Well, I think the typical Japanese products you find today, you know, those kinds of things are not manufactured in the U.S. So they were just imported in those kinds. My grandmother also had a dry goods section, material section. So they would import stuff like that, as well as the food stuff.
Well, that's definitely sort of the old style model of the mom and pop stores we have here. You know, if you look at Oshima's or any of those, sometimes they still have those very varied departments, and you go in and you think, wow, I can buy fabric. Oh, and I can buy food, which sort of doesn't seem to go together in a way, but that's really cool. I really very much like that. Uh-huh. What is Puna Plantation Hawaii, speaking of different names of your organization? Who is that?
Okay. That's another interesting story. I cannot tell you that I am 100% sure of the story I'm telling you. This is what I recollect because I was rather young when it happened. And the story is that my grandfather operated as sole proprietor from 1916 up to about 1954. In 1954, he incorporated into a company called K. Taniguchi Limited. And that company is still in existence today. It's a sister company. Fast forward several more years. At that time, stuff like product liability and suits against, you know, for that kind of stuff was coming out. So my grandfather and his advisors decided we should split the business, put the real estate in the K. Taniguchi Limited side, and put the supermarket operation into a new company. It just happened that my grandfather's accountant, a public accountant that served him, was also the accountant for this company called Puna Plantation Hawaii Limited. Puna Plantation Hawaii Limited actually was a farm operation It was incorporated in 1947, and it was going along, and in the late 50s, it was pretty much out of business, but the shell was already there for the company. So my grandfather's accountant told him, why don't you acquire this company and let's spin the supermarket into that company. So it was really, that's how it got its name. It was an existing company with the name Puna Plantation Hawaii Limited. We just spun the supermarket and they never bothered to change it to a different name. So, and it just carried forward.
And was there any actual farm operation going at that time with Puna Plantation Hawaii?
Not for us. By the time we acquired the company, the farm operations were stopped and all that.
And a brief interruption to remind you, you're listening to Island Issues, and I'm Sherry Bracken. We're in the middle of part one of two conversations with Barry Taniguchi and Toby Taniguchi. They're the grandson and great-grandson of the founders of KTA Superstores. And between this week and next week, we're talking about all the different aspects of KTA, plus other interesting topics like government regulation, leadership, the importance of giving back to the community, and more. Island Issues is sponsored by Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar at Queen's Shops and on Ali'i Drive. And if you don't listen to it on the radio on Sunday mornings, you may always listen to the podcast, lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. Click on Island Issues and then on the Island Issues microphone. Let's get back to our conversation. Barry Taniguchi, when did you start actually working for the family business? Were you five, six?
Yeah, and you know, you laugh, but that's true. I mean, you know, you would do small things. At that time, we had the downtown store, and my dad was the manager, so to speak, of that store, and he would have to sit in the office with a counter. In those days, checking accounts were almost nil, personal checking accounts. The plantation workers were paid with paychecks, but they didn't have checking accounts. So we used to, as a service, have a courtesy counter where we would actually cash their paycheck so they could shop with us and do whatever they needed. And I used to be at my father's arms, and he would kind of teach me what he does. So I was cashing checks and stuff by the time I was 11 or 12 years old. So I worked in the office. So that was my real first responsible job. The other stuff was, you know, sweep here and there. But so I would say about 11 or 12 when I really started working. I couldn't get paid yet.
Well, I was going to ask that. Did they actually pay you in any way?
Not then. So it was funny because when I became 15, actually 14, because you can still work 14 limited hours and get paid. So in those days, my dad said, okay, you're going to have paid. So you got to go out and work, be a stock clerk and a bagger outside. So I says, okay, fine, I'll do that. Now I'm getting paid, right? After a couple months, he calls me back in the office. He says, too much work for him, because now he had to do what I was doing. So he said, you know, you come back here and you're working here. So I ended up working. I didn't work. I worked outside a little bit, but not for the long term.
Did your mom work in the business also?
No, my mom actually was an insurance agent, and she worked for, in those days, it was a savings and loan called State Savings and Loan. And she gave me this bit of advice, which I actually followed, you know, for a little while. And her advice was that, I will help your father in the business, but I will never work in the business. So she handled our insurance. She handled, you know, doing stuff for him, typing letters for him and things like that. But she said she didn't want to get involved in the business operation itself. So I actually did that, you know, for a while. And when I went to college, I majored in accounting and I graduated in accounting. University of Hawaii at Manoa. And I actually went to work for an accounting firm. And I told my dad, you know, I'm going to be like mom. I'll help you, but I'm not going to work in the store. So I did that for like almost, must be close to 12 years I was away.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't get back to the store operations until I was 35. I had gone to work for a CPA firm. At the time it was called Haskins & Sells. Today it's called Deloitte. And after 4 years there, I went to work for one of their clients as a controller there. And actually, I tell my friends, and if they have kids in their business, make sure you do that. Work elsewhere first and then come back. You know, don't force them to come back right away. Because for me, it was a good experience to learn about how other realty finance company, realty investment company, which is a mini conglomerate, was owned by Richard Henderson, and he knew he controlled it. I learned a lot from him, and being his controller, you know, with work at the banks and things like that. So I got a lot of exposure there that, in my mind, helped me when I came back to the operation. And the reason I came back, actually, when I was 35 is that I had really thought that there was a fellow named George Matsumura who was working with us, non-family member, and I thought he could become the first non-family president of our corporation. I would stay on the board, but I wouldn't be in the operations side. Let George run the show. Unfortunately, George was killed in an auto accident in 1981, in late 81. And so after that happened, you know, the future was kind of shaky. And I talked to my dad, and he says, why don't you consider coming back, which I ended up doing.
When you talk about getting experience elsewhere, you know, going to college, getting experience, I read something about a talk you gave to a group, might have been of students, but essentially that kind of advice, broaden your vision in a way, because I know it's pretty easy to get tunnel vision if you stay with one company, one organization for your entire life.
You're right. I believe that. I really believe that. You know, it's funny, you know, when Toby became of age to work, and get paid. He says, Dad, I'm going to get a job. So I says, I don't know if he remembers this. Dad, I'm going to get a job. I said, okay, fine. I'm not going to work with you. And he went to work for a restaurant, which I think gave him a real good background, how to serve people, you know, the different operation. But and he moved, I thought he moved fairly high within that restaurant operation and pretty fast too.
Who did you work for, Toby?
I worked for a gentleman by the name of John Clark. He had a couple restaurants in Hilo, actually, and that was my first job. I actually started bussing tables.
Really?
Yeah. It was such a learning experience about hard work, about how different people are, you know, different people to work with, different personalities. Even the patrons at the restaurant were a really interesting study in the various human conditions that we all have.
Well, obviously, you encounter that every day at KTA. I mean, everybody buys groceries, and there's a whole lot of different personalities in there. So today, the business, you started out with essentially 2.5 employees, if you look at your grandfather and your grandmother and the little baby that was your dad.
Right.
How many employees today?
You know, I lose count, but between 750 and 800, and it varies with the season. So it'll go up and down.
Is there a way, and I don't even know what kind of answer I'm looking for, but is there a way to measure how big KTA is? You're a privately owned company, so your right. sales figures are not public. But is there a way to look at how many pounds of food you sell, or is that something that either is not something you want to share or not something that would be meaningful?
You know, it's interesting because a lot of places measure in terms of pounds of food sold. We don't, but I know it can be done, and we don't keep that data. So,
okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. I know you must sell a lot. So the path of succession has been from Barry's grandfather to Barry's dad to now Barry. And Toby, you're clearly working in the business. When did you come back into the business? How old were you?
Oh, gosh. I came back to the business in, I think, 1995 and thereabouts. How old would that make me?
24.
You probably lost all track.
It was after having lived on the mainland for a while, doing a number of different things, yeah.
Because you went to school at University of Portland.
Right.
And stayed up there for a little while after that.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
I always think it's a good broadening experience for kids from here to go to the mainland.
Oh, I agree.
You know, to sort of see what life is like outside of this wonderful and lovely protected environment. But when you're young, is certainly a great time to do that.
Yeah.
So, Toby, you have siblings. How many?
I have 3 sisters and a brother. Yes,
okay, correct. And do they also work in the business?
No, none of them do.
Really?
As a matter of fact, my kid brother, Ryan, actually will come. He's away at school right now. He will come back occasionally and work in seasonal times, but he has plans on being a physical therapist, is what he's studying for. But
interesting.
All my other siblings are all out there in the community doing various things. My older sister, who you know, very proud of, she's a doctor. She works in behavioral health. And she services the community or helps the community in that fashion. My younger sister works as a CPA, followed in his footsteps, but works for a private business as their finance person. And my younger sister, Amanda, she's over on Oahu, who's working in retail right now.
Yeah.
So obviously, Barry, you don't pressure the kids to be part of the business. So at this point, if you look at the management or the leadership structure, I'd say, of KTA, how many family and how many non-family? Because I know you have non-family, people like Derek Carrizo.
Right. Actually, if you had to break it down in the, quote, leadership positions, I would say 3. Toby, my brother, and myself. I'm sorry, 4. And Andrew Chun. Andrew Chun is a cousin.
Yes, we've had Andrew here. Right. I like Andrew.
Right. So the four of us are kind of in a top-level leadership positions. We also have other relatives working in a little lower position. So my nephew works with the buying group. My sister works in an office, but not in the leadership group. She works in the office. So, you know, we have, if you take all of the relatives, we probably have all over, we have about 14, I think, relatives working in some fashion with the store.
You know, family businesses all over face issues when it comes to succession. The next generation may or may not like the idea of being in the business. They may or may not have the capability to run the business. What do you see as the future for KTA? Staying a family business, you must get offers from time to time to sell.
We've had people inquire. As far as I'm concerned, and I can't speak for him, but as far as I'm concerned, we'd like to keep it in the family. So far, we've been lucky. You know, I'm the third generation, and if Toby did not come back to the store, it might have survived another half a generation with Andrew. Andrew is actually my cousin, so he's third generation. Toby's the fourth generation. So it could have survived at least Andrew if Toby didn't come back. But now that Toby's back, I think it's going to be his problem, whether there's going to be another family member that wants to come up. An interesting thing about leadership or succession, I should say, is that Tony, my uncle, he actually, if I can go back and kind of clarify some of the steps, my grandfather started it. My father and his brothers were the second generation that ran it pretty much together. And Tony, being the only one that went to college, UH, my other uncles and my dad went to Japan to trade schools. Tony ended up being the president of the company. Although my father and my uncle were still alive, but he became like the titular head of the operation. And when Tony passed is when I became the president. So, you know, there was one step from my father to me. But Tony always said, and I always remember this, he said, cream always rises. And he always said, cream always rises. And when you came down to it, is that if something happens, something will rise to the occasion. And it's true. You know, I think when Tony passed, you know, like I kind of like rose to that occasion and I ended up being president. I think if something happens to me, something would happen. And Toby, in a way, sort of rose to that for now. Beyond him, I don't know, you know, whether there's going to be anybody within the family that will rise to that occasion.
Toby, how old are your children?
My son, the older son, is graduating from Kamehameha this year. He's 17, and my daughter is 13. 12.
Toby, you're notoriously bad with numbers of how old people are, including yourself.
Right,
that's so cute.
Right. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Yeah. So does your son demonstrate any interest in this family business at this point? That's, understanding he's 17.
Yeah,
so
understand. Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. And the answer really is no. I think he has some interest outside in other areas. We've spoken about it. And he does not know exactly what he wants to do, but he does know what he doesn't want to do. And I told him, son, knowing what you don't want is just as important as knowing what you do want. He's moving in a different direction. My daughter, Sarah, we haven't really had that conversation yet. I don't know that she might be interested in the family business. It's a tough business, Sherry. It's long days. It's not very glamorous at all. We're can stackers. And so I think she may have other interests as well.
Well, of course, it is interesting when people are 13 or 17 or even 25 or 30. Sometimes the path to the future is not very clear. A lot of people go through different careers. So who knows what will happen in the future.
Absolutely.
But interesting, because that is a challenge for almost all family businesses. I've read stories in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal about that and the need to figure it out. And it's not easy to figure out.
It is not. Toby was like that, too, for a while. I thought he wouldn't come back to the business. And I never forced him. So actually, when he graduated from college, he stayed up on the mainland for a little while after that. And I remember him asking me, is there a place for me at the store? I said, if you want it, yeah. And he wanted it. So at that time, he kind of changed his path. I thought he was going to go like how I went. Often did my own thing for a while. So you can never tell, like you said.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And with that, we're going to say aloha to Barry and Toby Taniguchi for today and continue our conversation next Sunday morning on Island Issues, where we'll talk about their focus on local foods, their TV program Living in Paradise, some of the business challenges they're facing, leadership, and more. You may listen to the Island Issues podcast online at lava1053.com and at koacountry1077.com. Island Issues is sponsored by Hawaiian Ukulele and Guitar at Queen Shops and on Ali'i Drive. I'm Sherry Bracken. Until next Sunday, please, let's all live and drive with aloha. Ahoi ho.
Thank you for listening to Island Issues. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Email us info@lava1053.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Island Issues, a service of Hawaii Islands Mahalo Multimedia.